part of Dark Crime Fiction Wednesday. I'm glad that you're with me. I'm your host, Pam Stack, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. My guest in this episode is Jen Conley, who we are going to talk about her book, Cannibals, for your Anthony Award nomination consideration. It is definitely worth it. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Joining me again tonight. This is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Jen Conley has been a guest on Noir on the Radio. She was a host, a guest host for Noir on the Radio. She's written, she's one of the editors for Shotgun Honey, probably the most important e-zine for noir crime fiction and dark crime fiction, pulp, neo-noir. She has written for a bunch of anthologies. She has a new book out called The Cannibals that I think is so good that I want you to hear some of the stories that Jen has written. And consider, if you're going to BoucherCon this year, nominating her for an Anthony. Never, ever hear me ask this. Never. This is how convinced I am that she's the writer for you. I'm happy to welcome my friend back to the show, Jen Conley. Jen, welcome back. I'm glad you're
Thank
on
you.
Authors on the Air tonight. You know, we've talked to each other on Noir. You've been on there. You even guest hosted with Michelle, and it was tons of fun. You were in the Flash Fiction Throwdown for Dames in the Dark, and I always love listening to you read. You read so well, and you write such great flash, but we're here to talk about Cannibals, so tell listeners about your new book, Cannibals.
Well, it's actually not super new. It was out since last, May, and basically
yeah.
It's a short story collection, and it
right.
It's mostly crime fiction, and there's no cannibals
right.
in it. People always say to me, like, I don't know if I want to read about people eating each other. I'm like, no. one of the stories is called Cannibals, but because it's about a young girl who's walking through the woods and she wants to go one way, and her cousin and his friend want to go a different way, and then they're like, "There's cannibals back there, don't go back there." So you know how kids tell each other, yeah, they tell each
yep.
other these stories and you know
these
things
stories,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the point was that they end up, she does run into some, you know, nefarious characters, but they're homeless people, but they're not cannibals. They're
right.
different type of breed.
But for a kid, the imagination churns, I would imagine. I love reading your bio because you're very tongue-in-cheek about it. You're obviously from New Jersey. You obviously are raised in what you say the rest of America calls Jersey City, although you just say you're from the beach. You do have a dog, not a dog. And you even list your pet peeve. So, but I love listening to your accent. It's so classic, and you hate your governor, which I think is hysterical. It's a great thing to put in a bio. I mean, it's perfect. You also
yeah.
live in this same area where the Hindenburg crashed. So who would have thunk, right? But
yeah.
I think that because you live close to this wooded area, that was your inspiration for a lot of these short stories, wasn't it?
Yeah. I spent a lot of time in the woods growing up. I live actually at the Jersey Shore now, and I don't
mm-hmm.
– my dad still lives in the same house I grew up with. It's only like 15 minutes away, but it's – yeah, I grew up right where – you know, not too far from where the Hindenburg crashed. So even – we used to play soccer on the base, the naval base. And when my sister was playing, I have a friend, Lorraine, and we used to just walk over by the big hangar. Like, right where the Hindenburg crashed. No, there was no, like, in those days, this is obviously way before 9/11. So you could just wander
right.
around. So, I don't know, I guess
right.
it was a big impact on me because it's all pine trees, and then you see this monster hanger sticking out of the trees, and it's bizarre. So, yeah, definitely a lot of my stories are influenced from hanging out in the woods in that area. But also,
let me ask you a question before you go on. Where the Hindenburg crashed, is there any type of a landmark? Like, is there a sign that says this is where the damn thing went down, the Zeppelin went down, or no, it's just this, there is something there.
There is something there now. I haven't seen it. They, you know, after 9/11, they tightened up the naval bases and stuff, so you can't really, I can't get on anymore. But when I was younger, like I said, we used to play, there was a soccer field, and we used to play there. I had friends who lived on the base. My ex-husband actually was a Navy brat, and he lived on the base. So, yeah, it's strange but true. And, they used to, say, hey, come over and hang out for a party, and they just send in passes, and we used to get on very easily. And the same thing with the soccer. So, but there never was anything that said, or I never saw it. And then, but I've seen it in pictures now. I think in the past 10 or 20 years they have put something down. But, and now they use that hangar where the Hindenburg crashed next to. It's like a school now. And also they use it for all different things. They don't really keep hangar, blimps in there anymore.
Yeah.
But when I was younger, in the early 80s when I was a kid, no, they had nothing. And that's what it used to, it was just concrete and grass. And I remember saying to Lorraine, I'm like, it's so weird that they don't have anything, like this is where the Hindenburg crashed. It's like a major, historical situation. But, yeah, it's funny to drive
so
to Lakehurst. But go ahead.
Did you guys, you and your friends tell ghost stories and like creepy stories when you'd play in the woods?
Yes, I was the one who did that. I was the one who would scare everybody.
You were the storyteller. Really?
Yeah.
So you had a very vivid imagination even back then. Now, I know that in your day job, you're a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
What do you teach, by the way?
Right, I teach literacy now, like English and language arts, reading and language arts. Yeah, seventh grade.
Well, good. So you're right in your zone there. Do your students know that you are an author?
They heard rumors. I try not to tell them because I'm always afraid they're going to go out and buy the book, and they're 12, and some of these stories aren't appropriate for 12-year-olds.
Right.
I think if I taught, high school, it would be a little different. There are some things I'll tell them, I just wrote this, and I'll read them, something that's appropriate for them. But I try, and I tell them that I like to write, but I haven't, they've heard rumors because some of the other teachers were talking, and even a couple of them said, we heard you wrote a book. I'm like, really? Oh, how about that? And then I just kept going because, I just most parents would be, fine with it. But, you always get an oddball parent that might take issues with a couple of stories that are controversial in my book. And was like, I'm like, it's maybe not a good idea to, say too much. And that's the only reason, I'm trying to protect, and not that I write, 50 Shades of Grey or anything in that book. Some of the stories
it's
are
adult,
pretty
it's adult
violent.
Content. Sure.
Yeah. And there's some adult content. And yes.
Well, that's, you have to keep them away from that. Although kids now, I talked to plenty of authors who said, I was reading way over my grade level. I didn't really understand it. I just knew I liked the story. I didn't realize the impact of it. And also, I don't know, at 12 years old, are kids really kids anymore? I don't know. That's up for debate, I suppose. I want to talk for a moment about Shotgun Honey, because I have so much respect for you and Angel and the whole group there. Tell everyone what Shotgun Honey is, because I may not have given it enough cred, and I want to make sure you get the cred.
Oh, I'm sorry, we lost a little. I lost you a little bit.
Okay.
I mentioned
that you were an editor at Shotgun Honey, and I probably minimized how important Shotgun Honey is for noir crime fiction and dark crime fiction. I think you and Angel Cologne and all do such a great job with it. Will you please tell everyone about Shotgun Honey and exactly what it is?
Shotgun Honey is great. It's one of the last, I feel like it's one of the last noir magazines or zines that it were originally started about like 7-8 years ago, that it's still standing. And the our head editor is Ron Earl Phillips, and we, you know, he's the one who's keeping it standing. But it's basically it's online, it's a zine, and it's flash fiction, and we publish, I think, 2 or 3 stories a week, depending, and it's 700 words, and that's it. It's flash fiction, it's crime fiction, and it's 700 words. So you can't go over 700 words.
So as you well know, Angel Colin's been a guest host also many times. I love his sensibility. He's one of the editors. You're an editor. Explain what flash fiction is for those who've never heard of it before. Pardon me.
A really short story. It's about 700 words. Some places like 1,000, some people 500 words.
Right.
You know, you're talking about 2.5 pages, double space, about 700 words. And what I like to tell people is that when you write a flash fiction story, you shouldn't have more than 3 characters, and you should have 1 problem and 2 scenes tops. And that's it. So you should have, like, this, it should be an immediate problem right away in the first sentence. You should know who the character is and the problem right away, and that's it. And you should just go from there. So it should be like a story someone can, like, stand, you know, if they're waiting online and you know what I mean, and read it really quickly. And it should have a lot of impact. It should be extremely immediate, and there shouldn't be a lot of backstory and all that other stuff. So
does writing,
you know, people get
flash teach you to be a better writer of longer stories, do you think?
Yes. I think flash fiction is an excellent exercise that every writer should try, and keep those rules in mind. 3 characters tops, 2 scenes at the most, and 1 problem. Because it just makes you, it also makes you write very tight. So, you know, this should be an opportunity to showcase your writing ability, your style, you know, and what you can do in about, you know, in 700 words. It's almost like when you think about, you know, a great commercial, like Super Bowl doesn't have any more great commercials, but you know those great quick commercials that you would see back in the day? It, you know, those are funny, but it again, it's just 1 storyline. It's real quick. That's it. And that's the way your short story should be. Sometimes people send stories and like it's all backstory and it goes over years and it's just, it's like, no, and I, you know, that's not going to work.
It's really in the moment. It's a scene. It's a snapshot out of maybe a bigger picture, but it's the most impactful snapshot. Is that correct?
Right. I would say so, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I've written splash fiction, and I just try to follow. I mean, I've gone out of the box and not followed my own rules with splash fiction, but for the most part, I follow my rules, you know. And I think it comes and they're great things to do, because then when you do readings, you have those to read, because you don't want to be up there too long anyway. And it's, you know,
well,
it's hard
to read.
Well,
you also want to tell a compact story too. You don't want to be reading out of a full size novel, because then it's only one scene and there's no context, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I remember Rob Hart had told me about 4 or 5 years, maybe 4 years ago, and he said that he likes to write something for her when he reads noir at the bar readings, because that way he has a compact story. And I thought that was really good advice. Yeah, it's really good advice. And sometimes, you know, so I sometimes read the same flash fiction stories again and again, but I really do try every so often just to write something so I have it, and then I can read it at noir at the bar or whatever. But, you know, flash fiction can also be 1,000 words or 1,500 words. I mean, you got to be careful when you do readings, because you don't want to go too long, you know. People get antsy and annoyed.
I think when I was hosting Noir on the radio, or just occasionally hosting in between other hosts, I think we said 1,000 words was the cutoff. And some authors would come on and they'd read from larger stories, and it was difficult to get the full impact. But then there were people like you and Danny Gardner, who writes the best freaking flash fiction ever. So I'm assuming that you like the shorter story format, because you have a lot of stories, well, I mean, not a lot, but you have enough stories that are very impactful and that are not taking up a whole book. You could, so you can take, for example, in Cannibals, we can go there and read a story in a sitting and feel totally fulfilled by one of the short stories versus having to put a book down and come back to it some other time, and by then you've forgotten half the story and all. So how many stories do you have in Cannibals, and what is the average word count for each story?
Let me see, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, I have 16 short stories. I'm sorry, I didn't know that it was 10. But I write longer stories too. So I have several stories that are about 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 words, and then I have those little short ones I put in there. I didn't include too many slash fiction stories in there because as much as I love slash fiction, I don't think a story collection should be full of
only
flash
fiction. Yeah.
Yeah,
no, I agree with you because it's too short. You really want to be able to tell a story and to tell it in 700 to 1,000 words. That's only a scene of a story, correct?
Yeah, and I think if I'm looking at it now, I think I only have 2 flash fictions in this collection, actually. And, but all of my characters are somehow related to each other, and I don't mean by blood. I just mean either by they knew each other, or they grew up together, or they passed each other, you know what I mean? So most of the characters, so they're all somehow, if you read it closely, you'll find some of the connections here and there. So that's what.
So even the ancillary characters may end up having their own story in another one of the short stories.
Right. Like, for example, I have a story called Pipe, and there's a girl in the story, and she basically says something to the main character because she's in there for like 2 seconds. But when you go to Finn's missing sister, which is another story, she's the missing sister. You know, she's the missing person in the story.
Okay.
So, and I try to do that. Go ahead, sorry.
No. You tried to do that rather than introducing so many new characters. And that way it feels like a connected piece, correct?
Right. Yeah, and then I have a main character that pops up. She's in like 4 stories. And then the man that she used to be involved with, he has his own story. You know what I mean? Like, I try to connect everybody.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, do all of the stories take place in the Pine Barrens?
Or I call it the edge of the Pine Barrens because some of them take place where I live now in Brick. So that's on the edge of the Pine Barrens, and some of them actually take place in the Pine Barrens. So it's kind of like, basically what I like to say is all of Ocean County, which is part of the Pine Barrens and the edge of the Pine Barrens. So it's kind of like everybody, if you're not in the Pine Barrens, you're on the edge of them. So that's how I do that. So,
will you read something for us, please?
Yeah. Let's see.
And tell us the title of what you're reading so that we know where it is in the book, too.
Okay. Hold on. Let me just find something. I'm thinking. Hold on. I'm sorry. I'm not ready. I'm sorry. This is totally not good.
It's okay. You've only known about this for 2 months. Don't worry.
I know.
There's no rush.
Why don't I just read you the first Cannibals, the actual title story? And, the one about the girl. So, okay. The girl was a tomboy, and she could handle herself in the woods without her stupid cousin and his idiot friend. There's cannibals back there, the cousin said. My uncle seen them, the friend added. Both boys snickered. The girl named Jade didn't believe them. All 3 kids were at a standstill, scuffing their feet against the grayish-colored dirt trail, arguing which way to go. They weren't lost. They knew the way out of the woods, but the boys thought they should go west, and Jade thought they should go south. She said if they went her way, there'd be a shop right not far, and she was hungry. The supermarket had a cafe, and she hoped to get a sandwich. But her cousin insisted there was a pizza parlor his way, and Jade said that she'd eaten there before, and it was crap. In the end, the boys went west, and she went south. The boys warned her once again about the cannibals in the woods. Shut up, Jade snapped. The boys turned, shaking their heads and laughing. Do you like leg or arm? The idiot friend called to the cousin, and the cousin replied, only with barbecue sauce. those were the last words Jade heard from them. Okay, then that's the opening.
Oh, that's so good. I love that. God, that
yeah.
is so good. Awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
That's a really kick-ass way to kick off your book. Congratulations on that. Okay, so my mind is wandering, you know, and if you had not said, well, of course we know there's not cannibals in the book, and had you not
mm-hmm.
mentioned the story, I'd be thinking, well, what happened to them? You know, did they ever come back? So that's the kind of stuff that's going to give me a nightmare when I finish reading it. So thank you for that. But
yeah, that
but,
was a scary one. That one's actually, many people have said to me, that one's really scary, Jen. That one's scary because it's about a 12-year-old girl in the woods running into homeless men who are
not necessarily nice. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Interesting. So from this story, is there a character that appears again someplace?
Actually, no. Actually, it's strange that I just got through saying that everybody was... No, this one's more... It's a standalone, but if you read the whole book, you kind of get the feeling that she went to school with some of the other characters. Does that make any sense? Like, they knew
okay,
each other?
Okay, yes.
I don't always do that.
Yeah, I don't want you to do any spoilers because I want people
mm-hmm.
to read this. Your book, published by Down and Out, the publisher I absolutely adore. I think they are cutting edge, the best publisher
mm-hmm.
around right now. There is no one better than Eric Campbell who publishes crime fiction and noir. Congratulations on that. You are getting amazingly wonderful, terrific reviews on this, and everybody is talking about it in the community. So congratulations. I know BoucherCon is not that far away, but it's distance away. I know it's a long way to travel.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope that listeners pay attention to this book, and when it comes time to nominate for short story collections, that you are nominated, because I personally think you deserve it. I think your work, first of all, as an editor is spectacular, but your writing is so good, and I've heard your flash. I know that you're capable, and I love the book, and I want to thank you very much for being on the show. If I give you your platform to make your case, what is different about what you're writing versus the traditional category that you would be nominated in?
Well, the category I hopefully would be nominated for BoucherCon for the Anthony Award would be short story collection or anthology. So
right.
I'm a short story collection, and usually what is nominated in this category are mostly anthologies, which is a combination of different authors in one book. And it's funny because there's a couple of anthologies that will probably get nominated, and I have a story in them, but I'm like, but I'm still rooting for my own. So I don't know if there's too many collections out there. In fact, I'm not sure, but I don't think so. So one of the things I would be like a standalone author as opposed to an anthology. So that would be one of the differences.
Well,
and,
I know you were in the Joe Clifford anthology 2 years ago in North Carolina. You were nominated. You were part of the anthology that was nominated, Stories from the
Bruce
Heartland.
Springsteen
so
one.
Yeah, yeah. So and it was great. I loved it. So
that story's in Cannibals too. So if anybody that one's in Cannibals.
Okay,
so.
Good.
Yeah.
And I know that you contribute to anthologies because you really like that format, but do you think that you're going to write a full-length novel and again or at any time soon? Is it your plan to write a full-length novel?
Well, actually, that's what I've been working on all year, and I'm just about finished.
God.
I'm just doing some final rewrites right now. So,
how fun.
Do you have a target release date? No, I haven't gotten a publisher or anything. I haven't done all that. I'm just...
You're just in the writing
days. I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I'm just about done. You know, I have spring break coming up, so I'm going to use that time to just do some final little nitpicky stuff. I don't like my – I'm changing my ending a little bit. You know, I've been thinking about changing it for a while, so it's not like it's just something that popped in my head. So I'm just going to, you know, fiddle with that, and hopefully it will be done. And I have a couple of people said they just read it, so – and then I just – what I'm going to do, but
I want to ask you a question. You know, you do so many noir at the bars. You do a lot of flash. You do a lot of readings. You're very comfortable doing it. When you're writing, especially a longer story, do you still read your stories out loud to see how it sounds to your ear?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
It's really important, isn't it? To hear to put voice to it, isn't it?
The cadence, I mean, I've read a lot, and even now, read some of my stories in Cannibals out loud, and I'm like, I should have changed this word, I should have changed that word, you know, I'm always nitpicking at my stuff, but yeah, and before I hand it in to an editor, I'll read it out loud and see how it sounds, unless I'm on like a,
that's really great.
I just had to hand in a short story. And it had to be about a recurring character. It's actually one of my characters in Cannibals. I wrote a short story about her, another one about her. And I was reading it out loud, but I was like, I'm past the due date. I got to hand it in. And I'm sure he's going to come back with a lot of edits because I didn't read it out loud as much as I should have because I'm sure that's wrong. But I had to hand it, you know, I was like, I have to get this to him. But most of my stuff, I definitely read stuff out loud. I know you know, you can catch things that go wrong or if something's too wordy or if the beat's not right, you know, if you got too short sentences and things like that. I'm not, you know, it's funny about me. I don't know how to explain myself half the time but about writing. I just usually hear it and I know it's wrong or I know it's right, if that makes any sense.
I think that's important. That's what makes you such a good writer, is that you can hear when it's not right because you are actively engaging a different part of your brain. You know, I like reading out loud. When I see a really well-written passage, I'll go over and over and over it just because I like how it sounds. And to me, that's very important. But there are also authors who don't do that, and I'm always curious about it. Now, you know, as you know, I want to give a platform to anybody who writes books. So I don't care if you're traditionally published, if you're indie, I don't care if you're well established or, you know, a debut. I want everyone to have a chance to tell me about their books. But I will tell you, even people like Jeff Deaver, who has been on the show several times and will be back again, tell me they read out loud. They want to hear what their voice sounds like. So I don't think anybody should be afraid of it because it's funny, you and I are talking before the show and you said, oh, don't you read romance? And I said, well, you know, I came to romance late and yes, I do read it, but I read several, I mean, it's not my favorite, but I mean, there are some books that I love dearly that are romance, but what throws me out of a story fast, and it happens particularly in romance, is that if the male and female character sound identical, their cadence is the same, or if the male character says words that no man I know will ever say, throws me out of the story really fast. It's like a road. It's not even a speed bump. You know, a speed bump is a badly worded sentence, but a roadblock for me is when the female and the male characters sound exactly alike. If you just crossed off their name, you wouldn't know who was talking. And that is troubling to me as a reader. And I am a voracious reader. I love reading. Yeah. So I have a bounty of riches. I'm so lucky that I have so many books, that I get so many books from publishers. So if I get tossed out of a story, I stay out. The other thing is, if there's too much damn background, it's like you're going to describe the freaking sky in 14 different shades of blue, I don't want to know that. Give me the benefit of being a fairly savvy reader. You know, readers by nature, I think, are fairly intelligent people. So when an author uses, you know, monosyllabic words and they're very pedantic, I'm out of the story immediately. I'm done. I don't want someone to talk down to me. I think that the noir crime fiction writers I know and the authors that I follow are very, very savvy about their voice. Very savvy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So,
I think
and when you,
the,
I,
go ahead.
No, sorry. I like what you were going to say. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I think it comes from the training of, you know, when we talk about some of those magazines like Thug Lit, you know, Todd, one of the great things about Todd Robinson was that he didn't like bullshit, you know, just come, give me a good story, you know what I mean? Like he was very, very,
exactly.
You know, and Joe Clifford, and when he does his anthologies, you know, they're very pretty, just tell a story. They don't want bullshit. And I think if you read enough,
I don't
want to
know,
like,
about the neighbor's flowers and what kind they are or anything else,
right?
Because that is so unnecessary. I'll mention Jeff Deaver again. He says to me, Pam, you have to have an economy of words. That does not mean a story has to be short. It just means you have to be always keep your reader in the story. You have to move it forward all the time. If I have to stop and I'm tapping my foot and, okay, yeah, what's next? Then there's a problem. Yeah. And it isn't because I read fast or efficiently. It's because I'm interested in the story. So if your narrative is bogging it down, for crying out loud, and that's why reading out loud, I think, is another important thing. Not only for voice, but if you're, you know, describing the sky, tell me if it's going to storm or, you know, if you're expecting a tornado or if it's blue, and then move on. I don't need to have any other. I have a sky where I live. I can look up. I can figure it out. So,
well,
you're absolutely right. I think being the editor at Shotgun Honey and also writing your flash has given you a really good insight into keeping it tight. You said that earlier, and that was really, really important. Really important.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, I like backstory. I like description, but I think, you know, you don't always have to have action in your narrative, but that's where voice comes in. You have to be engaged. I grew up reading Judy Blume books, and I still go back to, you know, and I think my earliest training, because I wanted to be a writer since I was a kid. You know, this has been going on for couple decades now,
It's amazing.
And I read a lot of Judy Blume, and I think one of the great things about Judy Blume is that she had wonderful voice and like you said, an economy of words. Even as she was, you know, the main character is talking, it's almost like this is a friend you're talking to. And when I would close her books, I'm like, I miss them. And she wasn't big on the description, but she was big on drawing you into the person that, you know, the character.
The character, yes. Yeah.
And that's my biggest, you know, my biggest problem is probably plotting. But my strength is character development. And I think it's because I read so many damn Judy Blume books. You know, it's actually really natural.
That's a good thing though, because if you have characters who are static, If I don't get a feel for them one way or the other, or I only get one character's an image of one character and not the other, then it's not a complete story. And that happens more often than you would think. You know, that you're, and I'm sure you can pick that out right away. You're an editor, so you know what to look for. But how many submissions have you gotten where you have one character, I'm not talking about the second character is tied up and bound and gagged and, you know, obviously can't talk. But I mean, when you're supposed to have a dialogue between two people and you know about the one character, but you know crap about the other one, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. If they're interacting, tell me something about the second character. You know, tell me about your antagonist and your protagonist. I want to know both of them. So,
well, you can show it through dialogue by the word choice and the way they – I mean, I don't like changing spellings and things like that for dialect. You know, for me, one of the things – I lived in England for a couple of years, and, I used to write a lot about living in England, but I don't do that anymore. But one of the things that used to drive me crazy is that I'm like, I don't want to change the spelling of words, So what I started when I was there, I used to listen to the way they would say words, say something, like the way they would put words together. Like I'm going around the shops instead of I'm going to the store. So you know you can get character development, and you by just sometimes phrasing the way somebody phrases something.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And not you don't even have to describe the character. You just have them say a couple of things, and that helps. You know, just, you know,
yes,
your parents, older people talk differently than younger people, the way they even phrase things. I mean, that's where it's a good ear to do that. I studied that for a long, you know, when I was in London, I used to study the way people say things because I wanted to be a writer then. And I'm like, well, I just wanted to get that down. And, you know, you can go on YouTube now and just listen to people from other countries say things and get it down. So, and that, I just think that,
but that's good. You know, that's a good thing. I mean, that's being so observant of people that has to just really be an asset in your writing. When you have when you're thinking about writing, are you thinking about a scene, or are you thinking about placing a character into a scene? I mean, it's kind of like which comes first, the chicken or the egg. But are you thinking about a character and saying, what if Jade is, you know, da-da-da-da, or are you thinking, okay, here are these three friends are walking in the woods. I don't know who they are yet, but what if one of them disappears? How does that happen with you?
Well, you know, so many people have asked me that before, and, you know, sometimes it happens one way, sometimes it happens the other. I think it's more about me with scene. You know, usually it's with scene. And when Cannibals, for example, a lot of times my best stories are like a combination of three different things happening. And I used to drive, we used to have this huge, on my way to work, huge monster homeless camp, like just huge.
Uh-huh.
And I would drive by it every day, and I would just see these people. And there was a red light I would have to stop off at, so I can get like a 30-second observation. And I happen also to be reading something in this book called Weird New Jersey about this witch's well, or I don't know, whatever. And so, like, I read that, I saw this, and then I happened to be reading something about homeless camps, how they're divided sometimes. Like, I guess it was Florida or something. It might have been about a Florida homeless camp where the families are on one side.
Yes,
people,
that's true.
Pedophiles,
a lot of them are like that, yes.
Yeah, and pedophiles hanging up, you know what I mean? And I just started imagining those things, and then I just came to, I'm like, you know, thinking about a kid, you know, walking through the woods. And so kind of like she came to me a little bit later. And I actually, she's kind of not based, but I remember this girl I went to high school with grew up with. And I was like, you know, not that I was thinking about her, but I liked the idea of thinking about how would she react in this situation. And then I came up with my own character. Because I don't like to write people like real life people, but sometimes there are character traits of people I know that I think would go nicely into a character that I'm developing. But I guess your question is, I guess I am more scene, you know, now that I think about it. I don't know, sometimes
just
I come up with
off.
The character. Yeah, sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes I come up with the character in a scene. And sometimes it's strange how I come to the story and the original scene that I got on when I come up with the story. The story I just finished was like that. I had something totally different.
Than what you thought,
Well,
I've always maintained that your writer's minds are like a weird, you know, they're kind of like a Rubik's Cube or a maze or something with no ending. So, really is.
My brain
the
is
jumble of stuff.
Mind.
The jumble that goes on in there is mind-boggling, and I have no idea how you shut it off and then, you know, and do something else. You have to probably be very task-oriented, like a very zen moment. Like, let's go paint the baseboards in the house so you can concentrate just on that, you know. I just don't know how you ever calm that writer brain down because you're so creative. So, but I here's what I find interesting about you. You're very creative, yet you're a teacher, and so you have to be very pragmatic too. So it's an interesting kind of dichotomy that you've got going on there, Jen. I wish you the best of luck with Cannibals, even though it's been out for a year. I know that. But I really, really hope, and just in case people are wondering why I'm pimping your book, the way the Anthony Awards work is you get nominated for a book that you published in the previous year. It can't be a book that's been published this year. So if you are attending VoucherCon, anybody who's registered to go can submit nominations, and I really hope that you'll think about Jen Conley's book, Cannibals in the Short Story / Anthology Division. Jen, thanks a lot. Come back again and come back and host a show. You know, come pick somebody and interview them, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
And, you know, I'm going to be crossing my fingers and toes from Florida when you guys are up in Toronto. Would I love to be there? Yes. And am I able to? No. I just have too many shows going on here. But I will turn Tom Pitts loose to go ahead and do his annual VoucherCon show, which this will be the third one now, and that should be a lot of fun. So make sure you find him and, you know, go be a part of it, all right?
Oh, absolutely,
Jen
yes.
Conley, everybody, the book is Cannibals. If you're going to VoucherCon, if you're registered to go, you've got to be registered to attend VoucherCon in Toronto this year. Please, for your Anthony Award consideration, Jen Conley and Cannibals. Jen, you and I will talk soon, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's my show for tonight. I'm glad that you all are with me. I will see you on Friday. Have a great evening, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.